Bubala Show on 720 WGN. Well, in the last week or so, we've been so full of the different goings-on of the new administration every day with executive orders or tweets or different things that have gone on since President Trump has entered the White House. So we're not as much looking back right now at President Obama. But about a week or so ago, Shantae and I were talking off the air, and when the inauguration was going on and in our last few days of President Obama's presidency, I would see things on Facebook from people who did not like President Obama and did not like the job he did that were put out because, you know, Obama was – in his last speeches and everything he did, he was talking about the last 8 years in very glowing terms, as I think we would expect any president to. Nobody's going to go, boy, I really screwed that up. No, they're talking about all their successes and what they perceive as the good things that happened over the previous 8 years. But I did see things on Facebook and other places where people would put out what they didn't like, and they'd put out facts about unemployment or the lack of people in the workforce or too many people on aid or foreign policy, things like that. So we wanted to take a step back right now because it'll change as we look back over the years, right? But as it stands right now, with President Obama's presidency just having come to an end, how do we fairly look at the successes or failures of the last 8 years? Joining us on the phone right now is Ray Hederman, the executive vice president of the Buckeye Institute. Hey, Ray, how are you today?
I'm doing fine, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for jumping on the phone. Tell me what the Buckeye Institute is.
Well, we're an independent and research institution, basically a think tank located in Columbus, Ohio. And our mission is to work and advance a good free market public policy across all the states.
Okay, so in general, and this is maybe a tough question for you to answer, but when people talk about the Buckeye Institute, are they saying the right, the far right Buckeye Institute or the far left Buckeye Institute? Or are you able to say, no, we're pretty much just looking at policy and whether or not it's good or bad for whatever?
You know, we look at policy and we work with people both left and right, Democrats and Republicans, that are aimed at policies that boost prosperity in Ohio and other states. So, you know, we're very happy to work with anybody who has good ideas that aimed at putting people back to work and helping make people better off.
Okay. Fair enough. So let's talk about the economic policies. Let's start with that of President Obama over the last 8 years. You know, as the run-up to the election was happening, Hillary and President Obama are touting the low unemployment rate. And if we look just at the regular unemployment rate numbers that we generally hear about, they look pretty low. Looks like things are pretty good. But President Trump, when he was running, would say things like, no, the real unemployment rate's more like 42%. They're not counting everybody that just gave up looking for a job because things are so bad. What's the fairest way to look at that, and what's your assessment?
Well, you know, I always like to look at U3. That is the official unemployment rate, and by that measure, President Obama's done fairly well. It started out when he took over at 7.8%, and now it's under 5% when he left office. That is what we call pretty much the full employment rate. The bad news a little bit and why people criticize that is that the unemployment rate, the official measure, only looks at people actively looking for work. And we have seen a decline in the number of people looking for work. And part of that's due to just because we're an older society. And part of that's probably due to some policies that maybe have made people decide to retire early or not look for work as much. So, you know, you can cite to both measures. But overall, I think the official unemployment rate remains the best measure of labor health in the economy.
Let's talk a little bit more, because that was a sticking point, is people not looking for work. Now, to me, that would I can't imagine somebody just saying, that's it, I give up, I'm not looking anymore, unless that means they're able to get aid for so much longer. You know, could the Democrats be accused of having provided too much aid or done too much to make it easier for people to – because in general, when you say, oh, they gave up looking for work, I think, well, then what are they doing? They can't survive forever just saying, screw it, I won't work anymore. They need money from somewhere.
Exactly. So, you know, the way we decide whether or not people are actively looking for work is, you know, we survey, we say, have you looked for work in the past 4 weeks, past month? And that could be you've sent your resume out, you've called looking. So it's something that we're asking individuals to do. The reason why, you know, that can be people can drop out of the labor force sometimes is because they can get support elsewhere. For example, the Congressional Budget Office said, you know, the Affordable Care Act is going to reduce the number of people looking for work. because they can get health insurance or they can be on Medicaid, so they don't need to find work. Unemployment benefits. You may recall, you know, there was a big fight over President Obama's stimulus package because economists know if you make unemployment benefits too generous, people will say, I'm not going to look as hard for work and drop out of the labor force. So, you know, Democrats can rightfully be accused sometimes of expanding the welfare state so much that it creates a disincentive for people to work. And, you know, the evidence from the Congressional Budget Office backs that up.
Okay. The disincentive was short term, though, right? I mean, how long can they keep the unemployment benefits going? I understand that at first, well, I've got these benefits for like 8 weeks, so let's take this month off because, you know, I haven't had a vacation in 4 years because whatever. Is that a little bit more
exactly.
How it works? People had
exactly.
A little more time?
Okay. You know, these stimulus programs were supposed to be temporary, you know, boosted, and there was a big fight over about when they were going to start rolling back the expanded benefits. You can also take a look at other types of programs, SNAP, food stamp benefits, for example. Some of those used to have work requirements, and states waived those to say, you know, things are so bad in the Great Recession. And by the way, Matt, I think it is important to remember just how bad things were in 2009. I think, you know, probably President Obama inherited one of the worst economies since President Reagan did when he took office, so facing a very challenging set of circumstances. And so, you know, some of these programs are temporary, and I would argue that's probably why we didn't see the labor market recover strongly until President Obama's second term.
Okay. Let's talk about the types of jobs that are available, because I think that's a arguing point sometimes now, too, is, yeah, the unemployment rate's only 5%, but what type of jobs are these? How many people are working multiple jobs to make enough money? And every family now pretty much, right, is a two-income family. It's not like it was back in the day when one person could work, one person could stay home with the kids for the most part. So tell me about the quality, I guess, of the jobs that are available and of the economy. Does that relate at all to what you look at?
You know, absolutely. So, you know, I think one of the things people are feeling is that this has been one of the longest economic expansions in U.S. history. What I mean by that is that, you know, once the economy turned positive, we haven't fallen back in a recession. But a lot of people are saying, you know, I don't feel that much better off. And part of that is because even though we have had a long expansion, it hasn't been a period of rapid growth. And as a consequence, wages have remained fairly stagnant. It wasn't until last year, 2015, where the real median wage met and caught back up to where wages were in the Great Recession. So a lot of people felt that, you know, they were working as hard, and they weren't being paid as well as they were before, and they'd be right. So, you know, I think part of the characteristics when we look back at the Obama era is going to be a long period of steady growth, but very low growth. In fact, it'll be probably one of the lowest growth rates of any U.S. president of modern time when you look at the entire tenure.
Mm, interesting. So let's talk about and that's something that people do use. So you can kind of look at that two ways. Hey, we grew the whole time. Yeah, but you didn't grow fast enough. And that is, yeah. While that sounds snarky, that is a legitimate argument because it was such a slow growth, right?
Right. And, you know, and that's why probably a lot of people are sitting there saying, you know, you saw a lot of doubt, the people saying, I don't believe that we're in a recovery, you know, because President Obama's average growth rate, you know, never peaked above 2.7%. You know, by comparison, you know, Bill Clinton had some years where economic growth was 5%, even George Bush, 4.4%. So you had one or two years in most presidential administrations where the economy was going gangbusters. And, you know, President Obama never had that type of year, you know, where you had sharp wage growth. Everybody felt like they were having a job. Everybody felt better off. Instead, it's been kind of slow and steady.
It has been in certain areas, but like if we look at the stock market, went from around, I think, 7,000 or 8,000 when he took office to about 18 when he was on his way out of office. Is that a fair thing to look at, or is that just, you know, is that uncontrollable or unassignable for success or failure for a president?
You know, I think it's probably indirectly part of the what's going on with the president. I think you're seeing a return on investment. I think the president had conducted a pretty good trade policy, good monetary policy. Let's remember, you know, President Obama opened up borders and better trade with, you know, countries in South America, Central America, had good trade relations. Obviously a little different from the current administration.
Ray, you're wrong. Like, you're wrong, Ray. We're getting killed on trade. It's very disappointing. It's very sad, Ray.
Right. You know, but I mean, I think that's positive. But then, you know, the question is, you know, who's benefiting? And there's no question that some areas of the country, you know, didn't benefit to the same extent. And you combine that, you know, with the with more of a sluggish economic growth, and you see why people in different parts of the country have a very different viewpoint of whether we're better or worse off.
So overall, you would say the trade policies that the new administration is very much against were overall good for the economy and good for America. While they weren't in some areas, maybe because manufacturing maybe took hits or different things like that, cheaper goods made overseas brought back here, overall for the economy, you'd give it a positive?
I think overall, you know, free trade has opened up a great many opportunities for the country, and to being able to bring in, you know, cheaper goods. I mean, most people these days, if you think about, you know, hard to believe way back when, you know, but cell phones, you know, before iPhones. And the fact is that a lot of people now are able to afford devices with the processing power of a personal computer and carry it in their back pocket is pretty amazing. And I think those are some of the benefits of trade. And I think, you know, that's something that President Obama will get credit for down the road.
Well, that's one of the things that maybe is either unfair or maybe we're not thinking of. I wondered about this in the last few weeks when we're talking about bringing back manufacturing and bringing back these jobs. You know, the manufacturing jobs went overseas because they can get the labor so cheap, right? And that brings cheaper goods, which means we buy more. So it helps our economy, helps us have things we maybe wouldn't have if our iPhone cost $2,000 instead of $700. A lot fewer would get sold. Bad for Apple, maybe bad for America, maybe not. Who knows? You could argue that. But if the jobs do come back, you know, President Trump is really pushing bringing back manufacturing jobs. I would imagine that the manufacturing jobs that come back, it's not the 1950s where we're going to have these massive assembly lines and great paying jobs, because so much, I would imagine, A, is automated, and if it's very automated, that's probably a higher skilled worker needed to run an automated system or things like that. I think we say bring back manufacturing because, you know, the middle class, the lower middle class needs these jobs, but I can't imagine it's the same as it was 20, 30 years ago.
That's exactly right, Matt. I mean, the idea that, you know, we still need as many people to run an auto manufacturing or steel plant today as we did in the 1950s isn't true. You know, we have a lot more things that, you know, robots. So the good news is, you know, we're able to make these goods a lot cheaper so they're affordable to everyone. You know, you take a look at how many people had air conditioners or dishwashers in their home 50 years ago. Have those goods gotten processed? You know, many people now are able to have a dishwasher, which is great. But we don't need as many people in the manufacturing sector. So what needs to happen is we need to figure out how we take these people and put them back in productive jobs. And I think one of the positive signs, you know, the president did was he took a look at occupational licensing. And occupational licensing is the idea that, you know, if you want to be a hair braider, if you want to be a EMT, you know, if you want to be a barber, you have to be licensed by the state government. And about 50 years ago, when manufacturing was growing so fast, only about 5% of jobs were covered by these regulations. Today, that's about 1 in 5, 20%. And as a consequence, it makes it very hard for people being able to get a promotion, to be able to come up with a new idea and say, you know what, I'm going to become and open up my own hair barber parlor. And to his credit, you know, President Obama's White House was saying, this is a problem. This is holding back entrepreneurs and economic growth. You know, here at the Buckeye Institute, we work with people on the Democrats and Republicans to try to change some of these to create opportunities, because that's what's going to create the economic growth, put these people back to work. It's going to be figuring out how we can unleash entrepreneurs and create opportunities. And I'm hoping that kind of the spark that President Obama created his last year in this economic report and occupational licensing will really help drive some bipartisan effort at both the federal and state level to help these people pursue their dreams.
Well, it's interesting. I didn't know about any of this, but what I have heard over the last year from friends who had asked for, well, why are you going to vote for Donald Trump? And one of my good friends said, because of regulations, because there's too many regulations in government that are killing the economy, killing innovation. But you're saying that President Obama was trying to help with that, at least.
Yeah, you know, there's a great quote, you know, President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors, Jason Furman, and maybe you saw the Twitter page with him a great picture of him turning out his light on his last day. You know, they actually presented and they talked about this. And, you know, and Jason, who is an Obama CEA chair, said, you know, we're trying to put a big thumb on the scale on behalf of workers who don't have licenses and consumers that buy their services. And, you know, so the Obama White House recognized what a problem this is, and a lot of everyday people look at it. You know, we've worked with a lot of people, you know, inner city, you know, single mothers who sit there and say, I'm a hairstylist, and I want to be able to manage a salon. I have all the qualifications, but I can't unless I go back to the school, you know, and pay another $1,500 to get a hair braiding license. And, you know, and I think, you know, people should be able to determine for themselves, you know, what makes a good haircut. And it's being able to create those type of opportunities, I think, that will really help create better jobs and help people move up the economic ladder and really aid economic mobility. But there was a great report put out by the White House. We talked about it here at the Buckeye Institute, and it's something that I think that, you know, both left and right can agree on in moving this issue forward.
All right, we're running out of time, but I wanted to touch on one last thing because it's been such a big deal. Is health care. And under Obama, he put a lot of his political capital into the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, and now that is slowly being undone here under the new administration. How will history look back on what that health care did and what's happening now?
I think history will look back on that and say that that was a mistake. I mean, healthcare is one-fifth of the economy, and so I think you're seeing some of the implications of that with sharp premium increases. Estimates of the number of people signing up have been off, so as a consequence, insurers are having to raise premiums on that. You're taking a look at, there was a lot of tax increases attached to pay for the ACA, which is going to make it harder to manage our future debt and deficits. And I think finally, the other legacy is that, you know, President Obama said, I'm going to do a lot of this stuff through executive authority, executive orders. And, you know, I'm very worried about the precedent that's set where, you know, the executive action unilaterally without Congress is done to move an awful lot of policy. So, you know, that trend didn't start with President Obama, but it definitely continued. But I think at the end of the day, people are going to look at the ACA and said, this is a lot of effort, a lot of money being spent that affected pretty much a small number of people through the Medicaid expansion.
Do you think it's going to get better? Looking forward here, it's being repealed. There is not a clear what's going to replace it. So there's a lot of concern that, you know, people that were now finally covered under existing conditions or all the sorts of things that and listen, I don't disagree. The Affordable Care Act, I think, was a beautiful idea and a wonderful thing to try to get more people covered and help more Americans. But I don't think they got it all worked out. And whether that's President Obama's fault or him and Congress not working together enough or just needed more time, whatever. Right now, my premiums are jumping up to $4,400 every 2 months for a family of six. And that's insane because 10 years ago, I was paying $1,700 every 2 months. So it didn't go too well in my book.
Well, you know, and you're exactly the type of person that I think got affected. And, you know, and we know that all the numbers were wrong in the Affordable Care Act, right? And that's why they said, you know, insurers were losing way more money than people expected because fewer people signed up than they anticipated. And so I think, you know, I think things are going to have to get better. I think whoever was elected president in November recognized that they're going to have to do something. I think that basically it'd be great to start over with the ACA, start from a more bipartisan and say, where do we agree? You know, protect people with pre-existing conditions, you know, figure out how to properly put them in the market, give them some help to be able to afford the premiums. But I think you're going to have to start back over and kind of work together to rebuild the economy. I think if Republicans sit there and say, you know, we have a magic plan that can better allocate one-fifth of the U.S. economy, I think they'll be making the same mistake as President Obama.
Do you see something good happening in the next couple of years? I mean, or do we just go back to more of a freely open marketplace for now? I mean, do you see them coming together and really creating something? It seems like we're taking this stuff away, so there's going to be this vacuum in here. If they do hopefully come up with a replacement, there's going to be a time of I would imagine, a lot of people going back to being uninsured, which has to hurt the economy too. And I don't know. I want to have faith, but I don't know that the premiums are going to come back down as quickly as we would hope that they would if all this other stuff goes away.
Right. Well, you know, some of the Republican plans that have been out there, Congressman Price's plan, nominee for Secretary of HHS, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, you know, put out a plan last summer. And, you know, and they basically said things are not going to go back to the way they were in 2008. You know, we'll try to figure out a way to offer more protections, to try to fix some of the problems with the healthcare system. So I think, you know, we'll be better off once we get through this transition period that, you know, we won't go back to 2008 and forcing Republicans, I think, to put their own skin in the game, come up with their ideas, and be able to say, look, you know, this is how we're going to approach this problem. And I think things will be better than kind of the unilateral approach that basically, you know, as you recall, after the election of Scott Brown, you know, the ACA was not the ideal plan, you know, the Democrats wanted to pass, but they didn't have the votes anymore. And so I'm hoping that Republicans, you know, can do a better job, you know, once they repeal, think through some of the issues and say, look, let's figure out how to protect people, be able to sit there, let some of the market and competition come back into the healthcare system to hold down prices, cover more people at a lower cost.
Ray Hederman, the Executive Vice President of the Buckeye Institute. You can find more at buckeyeinstitute.org. You can follow them on Facebook. At Twitter, you can follow Ray at REA Hederman Jr. You got to get a better Twitter handle there, Ray. That's going to be very tough to track you down. At REAHEDERMANJR at Ray Hederman Jr. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone.
I appreciate it, Matt. Thank you for having me.
All right. So there's that opinion. Your opinion may vary, but I wanted to look at those sides because you see a lot of that. Lost in the furor of the whole first week of the new presidency was talking about the last 8 years. But there'll be lots to talk about over the next 4 years. News is next. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN.